Committee on Health Policy to order. This is Wednesday, April 13th, 2005. And it looks like, which one? We're going to open House Bill 2426, and I would like to call Representative Mitch Greenlick to the stand.
Good, may I bring somebody to the back?
Yes. Paul Cosgrove. And that's 24. It's so nice to start hearing some House bills now.
Yeah, we're trying.
All right.
Madam Chair, I'm Mitch Greenlick, State Representative, House District 33, and I thank you very much for hearing this bill. This bill expands, I think, in a very appropriate way, a program started several years ago called Limited Access Practice Hygienists, which allows dental hygienists, specially trained, to serve without the supervision of dentists in places where people have difficulty getting access to dental care services. The bill's been worked out. It's a compromise bill, and I think it's quite ready for prime time. It does three things. In the original bill and in amendments over time, it's had a very specific list of which places an LAP hygienist could practice. This bill expands that list after a great deal of testimony from neighborhood health clinics, fully qualified health clinics, and other kinds of programs. It expands that list. And it also gives the Dental Licensing Board, what's the term?
Oregon Board of Dentistry.
Oregon Board of Dentistry, thank you. The Oregon Board of Dentistry, the ability to add to that list on their own rights. Mr. President, welcome. Add to that list on its own right is the second thing. It also allows the Oregon Board of Dentistry to make recommendations on their own to allow modest changes in the scope of practice of the LAP hygienist. It turned out the odd situation because their practice scope was defined by statute that the Oregon Board of Dentistry could change the scope of practice of regular hygienists but didn't have the authority to appropriately change the scope of practice of the LAP hygienist. So this
LAP
limited access practice,
yes,
hygienist. This allows limited access practice hygienists to their scope to be changed by the Oregon Board of Dentistry. Basically, I think that's the effect of the bill.
And what kind of training does the limited access?
They have a significant amount of extra training beyond the training that a regular hygienist said. You remember what that number is? 1,000?
Madam Chair, Paul Cosgrove, representing the Oregon Dental Hygienist Association. They have to be in active clinical practice for at least 5 years after graduation and initial licensure, and then they have, I believe it's 45 hours of extra courses and then additional continuing education to renew their licenses. And the statute actually specifies, I don't believe it's part of the statute that is being amended in this bill, but the statute actually specifies that those courses have to be approved by the board and consist including pharmacology and patient psychology and independent practice kinds of things.
And basically what dental hygienists do is they clean the teeth, they will put sealants on, prescribe fluoride? Is that what's being added here?
Well, Madam Chair, actually, the Oregon Board of Dentistry passed a rule earlier this year to allow regular dental hygienists to prescribe fluoride, but because of the limitations that Representative Greenlick mentioned that have always been in the statute with respect to limited access permit hygienists, that couldn't apply to them even though they have more training. This bill explicitly says prescribing and applying fluoride and applying sealants is part of their scope of practice.
They do some examinations and referrals for other dental work as they see needed in their practice.
All right. Well, there seemed to be no opposition against this bill. Is that correct? Yes, Senator Courtney.
Thank you, Chairman. I want to ask some questions here about this amendment. So the discretion of the Board of Dentistry only involves locations and populations. Right?
Now, we've also added their ability to change scope of practice as well for these limited access permit hygienists.
Okay, Representative Greenlee, that's what I'm trying to figure out.
Well, what it does, if you look on page on line 15 and 16 of page 2 of the bill as the A engrossed version of the bill, the current bill does not allow the Board of Dentistry to expand the scope of unsupervised practice by rule. This takes away that that restriction.
I want to ask the question again then. I see where clearly discretion is there for purposes of population and location. It is clearly there. Representative Greenlee, you went beyond that and said it's also there for purposes of scope of practice of what you're trying to do with the scope and intent of the bill. Is that right or wrong?
That's absolutely right.
Let me just stop knowledge and I'm going to talk again. Well, I may. This expansion of scope of practice can only be done with the discretion of the Oregon Board of Dentistry.
Well, we could change it by statute, but this also allows the board, as a part of its rulemaking process, to expand the scope of practice.
You know, Senator President Grant, you just did it to me. Let me ask the question.
I'm sorry, sir.
This is to allow dental hygienists to be able to do some things within the scope of practice, which they can. So you're going to broaden the scope of practice for dental hygienists. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct. Madam Chair, President Courtney, what the LAP hygienist can do is basically the same definition or within the overall definition of what hygienists can do. What this allows them to do is to do it in certain circumstances, in certain environments, without a supervision of a physician. The board had the scope by rulemaking to change this, had the ability by rulemaking to change the scope of what a dental hygienist can do. And an example we just mentioned was by rulemaking, they allowed hygienists to prescribe fluorides. The problem was that because of the statute, they couldn't allow the limited access permit hygienists to have that same scope of practice. So it's not intended that these hygienists would have a greater scope of practice than other hygienists. The intent is to allow them to do what other hygienists do in certain limited practice arenas without the supervision of a dentist.
And one more thing, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. That decision will be made ultimately by the board or the Oregon Board of Dentistry.
By rulemaking, yes, that's correct. Well, we give them the statutory. We take away the restriction from allowing them to do it that was in the prior version of the bill. I mean, in the prior version of the statute, in the current version of the statute.
And basically, just to make sure that I understand what you're saying, too, right now the Board of Dentistry, by rule, can expand the scope of practice of dental hygienists.
That's correct.
But they are not able to expand the scope of practice of the limited access dental hygienists, and that's what this bill is doing.
That's right. They're not allowed to do it beyond the very specific...
And that was by error.
I don't think it was by error. I think this bill is... This act has emerged over four sessions now by a series of compromises, and the compromises have changed as the need for these people has grown. There's a relatively small number of them. I think at last count it's under 200, is that right?
It's actually, Madam Chair, Paul Cosgrove again, it's more like 60, although there are several who are in the process of obtaining their certification with the additional continuing education I described, so it'll be growing.
Yeah, it's an emerging area, and that's why There's a new set of compromises.
I know that my niece is a dental hygienist, and my brother is a dentist. And my niece goes to the coast, and it's been frustrating for her to just do, it had been until we started passing legislation, to do some of the volunteer work with those underserved populations. And that's why I feel this is so important. Okay. Is there any other further questions or discussion?
May I just add one thing?
Yes.
That you asked, Madam Chair. The bill is supported by the Oregon Rural Health Association, the OHSU Office of Rural Health, the Oregon Primary Care Association, Elders in Action, and several other groups. The opposition that originally had with the bill as drafted from the Oregon Dental Association has been removed, and I've been assured that they are neutral on the bill. I don't believe there's any opposition to the bill, and a good deal of support.
Ed Patterson, will you come up? Yes, Senator
Cruz. I point
Cruz.
Out, Madam Chair, that it's a very bipartisan group of sponsors on this piece of legislation.
Still doesn't make it good.
Well, I could, in this case, it does. No, no, no.
I am. But not on. I'll grab it back if I need it.
I'm sure you will. For the record, Madam Chair, my name is Ed Patterson. I'm here representing the Oregon Association of Rural Health, or the Oregon Rural Health Association, I should say. I just want to go on the record. The dental hygienist approached our board prior to the session, asked for our support, and our board unanimously gave that support. And we are encouraged by the language of the bill that allow the hygienists can go work in rural clinics. In my testimony, I passed out for the record, and I also have a map attached to show you where all these rural clinics are located in the state. And we think anything that can encourage medical practitioners to come to the rural areas will help our struggles in recruiting the professionals. I urge you to adopt the bill and give a due pass recommendation.
All right. Any further discussion? All right. I'd like to close the public hearing on House Bill 2426. And I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 2426.
Madam Chair.
Thank you for having the session. I'm sorry if I added to confusion.
No, you didn't.
That's what you usually do, though, Matt. So, okay. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2426A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz has moved House Bill 2426A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Senator George?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Senator Morissette?
Aye.
Chairman
Sanderson? Aye. House Bill 2426. Motion is carried, and Senator Cruz? Senator Cruz will carry the bill. And I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2426, and any comments? No, I think he's having it. Okay.
Do you want to open that one, Mr. Stanky, so I get another comment?
Okay, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 8, and we're going to stand at ease while we get someone on the phone. reconvene the public hearing in HJM 8, and we will close the public hearing in HJM 8, and we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2177. And is that yours?
That was a gentleman
from Taiwan. Oh, all right, let's close the public hearing on 2177 and open House Joint Memorial 8, and Representative Merkley's here, so let's at least get it started.
World Affairs.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Representative Butler's staff contacted me and asked me to come down when you had this bill up because I understand he's unable to attend. I'll apologize in advance that I'm not intimately familiar with the bill the way he is, but I will try to outline a couple of the points that he would like to have made.
Please identify yourself.
Yes, Representative Jeff Merkley from District 47. The reasons to pass the resolution in support of Taiwan's participation in the World Health Organization are as follows. Taiwan established a sister state relationship with Oregon in 1986, and since then relations have had remarkable progress. In 2004, Taiwan is Oregon's seventh largest trading partner with exports totaling $650 million. Second, over the years, the U.S. government has supported Taiwan's participation in the World Health Organization. Besides, the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives support the case as well. Third, Taiwan only wants observer status, which is very reasonable. As you may be aware, both China and Taiwan are members of the World Trade Organization, APEC, and other organizations. Number four, the World Health Organization is about improving health. It has nothing to do with politics. Epidemics have no political alliances. Fifth, Taiwan has sought to share its resources with people in distress around the world. For example, Taiwan has not only provided medical assistance to and shared her success experience with China, but also donated over $120 million to the international community in medical or humanitarian relief in five continents between 1995 and 2002. Sixth, it is unfair that when an epidemic breaks out, Taiwan cannot receive disease control supplies and vaccines because it's not an observer or member of the World Health Organization. Seventh, Taiwan has been a de facto sovereign country since 1949. Since then, China has not exercised jurisdiction over Taiwan. And finally, Taiwan and Oregon share the common value of democracy, freedom of speech, and freedom of media. These are reasons that Representative Butler would like to have been here in person to draw to your attention, and I'm honored to have the opportunity to do so for him.
Yes, Senator Horsett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Merkley, they could not have sent a better person to represent an issue like this than the director, former director of the World Affairs Council. My question, though, it may seem frivolous and facetious, but is this going to damage the relationship between the United States and China, and because of be perceived as Taiwan expanding its role on the world scene? I know that mainland China has once again threatened Taiwan. Taiwan is generally under the protection of the United States. What's your assessment of the world scene?
Madam Chair and Senator Morissette, that is a very important question. And quite frankly, I wondered the same thing. And I don't feel like I have the expertise to have a great command of the issue. I do feel it's significant that both Taiwan and China are members of several other organizations. And if that coexistence is possible there, why not here? I also feel that in a way this is a statement of support for a land that has established democratic traditions. The Kuomintang was in charge of Taiwan until very recently. I had a chance to be in Taiwan when it had just had its first free elections, And a party that had virtually no money, it was all heart, no finance, won the presidency. And the president-elect was preparing to take office. He has since won re-election. And so I think in our small and modest way, we're voicing support for that process and for their participation in the world. I don't think that a resolution from Oregon is going to send great ripples in the international community as far as their relationship. So I'm not, on balance, too concerned about causing or aggravating problems either between the countries or between the U.S. and China.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Taiwan has been a friend of ours, and I think this is a good bill for us to pursue. I do plan to work it, but I think let's put this to the end, and we'll bring it back so we can get our phone call through. Okay, thank you
very much,
Representative Merkley. And I'll close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 8, and I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2177. And Mr. Berkovian, would you like to give us a brief summary?
Thank you, Senator. This does authorize the State Board of Clinical Social Workers to develop rules that provide certificate renewal dates for annual birth month. It modifies conditions for imposing delinquent renewal and lapse certificates. Basically, the board is going to a different cycle, and I will defer to the board director in the audience to provide more detail. Thank you, Senator.
Okay, thank you. I'll call John Langenwalter and Patrick Allen to please come up, and if you have someone else that wants to join you, that's fine. Proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Langenwalter, the administrator for the Oregon State Board of Clinical Social Workers. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on behalf of the board on House Bill 2177. Mark Oldham, the chair of the board, a licensed clinical social worker in the school system in Eugene, and Suzanne Turley, a public member of the board from the Tigard area, who's the vice chair, were unable to be here today, and regretfully so. They will gladly come back at a future time if you wish for a public hearing or work session. In the handout, you have my testimony. I'm not going to read through that, but just highlight a few things. And you also have documentation that supports the bill. The first thing to remember is that this board's primary mission is public protection. The board accomplishes that mission by enforcing a strong code of ethics through a thorough and fair complaint resolution process and through an impaired professionals process. We've also developed a very stringent licensure application and annual renewal process to ensure that the licensees are meeting the requirements that we have here in Oregon and continue to meet those as we continue to license them year after year. The board's statutory authority is under ORS 675-510 through 675-600 and through Administrative Rules 877. Just for your information, the board is a 100% other-funded agency. This bill is before you because it was requested by the Education Subcommittee of the Joint Ways and Means Committee two sessions ago. They put a budget note in, and you have the quote there from the budget note that DAS and the agency were to study the ending balance requirements and cash flow of the agency and see if there was a different method of doing renewals than just everybody at once a year on December 31st. We've done that study, concluded that study, and affirmed the wisdom of that suggestion, and House Bill 2177 would allow the board to move to a staggered renewal process. If the legislation is approved, the board will move to a birth month renewal process and also do the continuing ed at the same time. The anticipated benefits and efficiencies include the financial. Currently, the DAS policy requires a three-month carryover balance for agencies. Under our current system, we do need a five-month carryover balance because our money doesn't start coming in until the end of November when they start sending in their renewals for the end of the year. So we'd be able to drop out two months of carryover balance. The office efficiencies are just handling approximately 3,000 files in the course of about 10 weeks is a major task. It's not that we don't answer phones during that time. We do. We try and handle everything appropriately and timely, but it doesn't work as well as being able to spread it out across the year. By going to a birth month renewal, we would fluctuate between a low of approximately 210 files a month to a high of approximately 270 files a month. And it would just enable the board and its staff to handle all of the issues of the board in a timely manner year-round. We're ready to move ahead with this process if the legislature affirms it, using the model that was created by the Board of Optometry several years ago, who went through this very same change, and it's worked very well for them. So we've talked with them several times to develop, okay, what do you do when and how do you do this? We have the prorated chart fees and the prorated continuing education fees for you to look at if you wish. This bill was passed by the House on the consent calendar with no opposition and now is before the Senate and obviously referred to this committee. Madam Chair and members of the committee, it is the intent of this testimony to focus the committee on the core issue of enabling the board to more efficiently protect the public through prompt resolution of complaints and more efficiently dealing with licensure application and renewal processes by moving the board's licensure process to a birth month renewal. House Bill 2177 will provide the board the ability to more effectively protect the public through a more efficient annual renewal process. On behalf of the Board of Clinical Social Workers, I respectfully ask for your support of this measure, and I thank you for your time and consideration today, and will gladly answer any questions if you have them.
Questions, committee?
No, Madam Chair, this is something that a lot of boards have been doing over the course of the last few years. It makes perfect sense.
Okay.
Madam Chair, just incredibly briefly, Patrick Allen with the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. We're a co-requester on this bill. I think you've seen actually one of these sorts of bills earlier this session. We're recommending it as a best practice for licensing agencies and working with about four agencies this session with legislation to do this. Over on the House side, there was some discussion about, gee, shouldn't we come up with a bill that just blanketly does this for everybody? A legislative council persuaded us that doing it bill or agency by agency is a better way to go about that, and we'll work with agencies over the coming interim to find out if there are more places where this can be applied, but we would also encourage support.
Great.
Yeah.
Comment to that, and besides that, it's better if the folks come to the realization on their own that this is a better way to do business and we aren't forcing it on them. So I agree with your comment.
Well,
yes, Senator Morse.
Yeah. I don't see in the bill where it says you're going to go to a birth date. It gives the board the flexibility. So I don't know why the Ledge Council doesn't feel that it's appropriate to give boards the flexibility of changing their renewal dates.
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, no, the issue wasn't that. It was doing a bill that said, notwithstanding any other provision, agencies can do this, as opposed to a bill that went agency by agency and changed each relevant ORS. And that was just a matter of timing to be able to do that this session.
I see. All the ORSs would be.
Okay. Yeah. Any other discussion? All right. I'd like to close the public hearing on House Bill 2177. I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 2177.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2177 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz has moved House Bill 2177 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Courtney?
Excuse.
Senator George? Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Senator
Morissette?
Aye.
Chair
Monahan? Aye. Motion carries. And I think, Senator George, would you carry this? All right. Now I'll close the work session on House Bill 2177, and I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2201. Would you briefly describe to us, Mr. Bracobi, and what's before us?
House Bill 2201 somewhat similar to the previous bill. It does allow the Oregon Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists to develop rules that establish a license renewal and late filing grace period. And we do have someone here to testify from the agency.
Thank you. Julia Cooley from the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. It's actually almost an identical bill with the exception of the agency name. And
please identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Julia Cooley. I'm the administrator for the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House Bill 2201 on behalf of the board. Christine Turner and Bruce Nevin, both licensed professional counselors, the chair and co-chair of the committee, were not able to come today, but would be more than happy to come again, to come at some time if you wanted to discuss this legislation with them. The primary mission of this board is public protection. The board accomplishes that mission through enforcing a strong code of ethics and stringent licensure application and annual renewal process. The board currently has about 1,600 individuals that are licensed as counselors and marriage and family therapists, and around 400 pre-licensure individuals in a two-year supervised work experience as a postgraduate. As postgraduates. The board's statutory authority and responsibilities are established under ORS 675, 705 through 835 and Administrative Rules 833. Again, I don't know how much I'm going to be saying basically the same thing as my colleague John with regard to the 2001 directive from the House Education Subcommittee on Ways and Means to basically study this kind of procedure going from an annual annual application renewal to a birth month renewal, staggering not only the workload but the revenue flow to see how efficiently that would work. The board, actually, I referenced earlier that we have registered interns with the board. These are postmasters, individuals in jobs who are being supervised. There are about 400 of those individuals, and we currently, although not birth month, but when they're approved for their registration, we now do operate at least a small program where we're having renewals every month, and we find that to be very efficient, and can kind of extrapolate from that this would be a great idea. The proposed legislation, as you noted, Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, leaves some discretion to the board in terms of the renewal process. And this could be a connection also to House Bill 2094 if it passes and is signed by the governor, which allows longer-term licenses. So we would have the ability to offer a two-year, three-year, I believe it goes up to a five-year license, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. This bill passed the House of Representatives on March 2nd, 2005 with a 58-0 vote. Talking about benefits and efficiencies, financially, basically staggering the revenue flow from month to month, and I've included a chart that shows how we would anticipate by birth month the revenue flow would come to the board, and it's very even. I think there are a lot more people born in June for some reason, but other than that, the board would be able to reduce its ending balance to 3 months. The board's annual renewal is April 1st, so right now we need to have at least a 9-month ending balance. So this would make a significant difference there. Other efficiencies, really, we work with something that's quite similar now, and not having that glut of work in a very short period of time, I think, is a real good customer service opportunity for this board. We'd have a low of 136 applications to review up to a high of 159 based on our current licensee base. So we would really like to move to this process. We, again, would follow the Board of Optometry model in terms of conversion. It worked very well for them. It's mostly about communication and the kind of information that you want to share and how frequently to make a smooth transition. And the board is currently converting to a new data management system for licensure and compliance. And through this conversion, the board would have the ability to not only license by birth month, but it could also offer options to licensees so that they could opt to license annually or biannually, which would be a nice thing to offer to folks because some new licensees maybe don't have the revenue that others will have. So I think with that, I conclude my testimony, Madam Chair, and would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions?
Well,
yes, Senator Cruz?
Senator Morissette and I were trying to figure out what was so special about October if so many babies were born in June. And we just weren't able to make the connection.
That was his thing, not mine.
He's the one that asked the question.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, I have no comment.
Oh, you can?
Oh.
You were or you were not?
I have no comment.
Oh, no,
which
comment.
Would be very wise.
Okay, is there any other further discussion? I'd like to close the public hearing on House Bill 2201, and I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 2201.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2201 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2201 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Senator George?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye. Aye.
Senator Morissette?
Aye.
Chair Montaigne?
Aye. Motion carries. Senator Morissette, would you like to carry this bill?
I'd be delighted.
Thank you. Senator Morissette will carry House Bill 2201. And Senator Courtney would like to... I would like to hear a motion to suspend the rules so that... First, though, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2201. Do I hear a motion to suspend the rules so Senator Courtney could vote on House Bill 2177?
Madam Chair, I move the rules be suspended to allow President Courtney to vote on House Bill 2177.
Okay. Do I go into the work session first?
You already were.
Yeah. Okay, we're in work session for House Bill 2177.
And we were before I made that motion, so the motion stands.
All right. Any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered. Senator Courtney, how do you vote?
Yes.
All right. I'd like to close the work session on House Bill 2177, and I'd like to open the public hearing on House Bill 2243. Mr. Bacobian, would you give us a summary?
Thank you, Chair. This simply eliminates a section of 1999 law that I placed at each one of your in the packets. That eliminates the Genetic Research Advisory Council. From what I understand, this council has not been in existence for a number of years within the Office of Oregon Health Policy and Research. This is simply a housekeeping bill that eliminates that section of Oregon law. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Kylie, is it Ariel? Okay.
Madam Chair, Senators of the Committee, for the record, my name is Kylie Ariel, and I am the Program Coordinator for the Genetics Program at the Oregon Department of Human Services. I would like to say that the DHS supports this bill. As Mr. Bacobian said, it simply eliminates an obsolete committee from statute. This committee was replaced in 2001 with the currently active Advisory Committee on Genetic Privacy and Research, and this committee is active to this day advising the DHS and the legislature on genetic privacy and research issues. I'm happy to answer any more questions.
Question?
No, Madam Chair, just that when we created the second one, we should have deleted the first one at the same time. I mean, this is a real issue, and there's some important, you know, the ability, this piqued our attention several sessions ago, the ability to buy genetic material on the internet. There's a whole lot of things that fall into this scope, so it's important that we try to keep abreast of the changes in the market, but we shouldn't have two advisory committees doing it.
Okay, Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was on the Health Committee in the House under the leadership of then Representative Cruz. This was really an interesting discussion because it was an ethics issue. It became part of an ethics issue and became, I can remember the discussion of designer children and so on. And it did lead to the passage of the bill that we're now, or the part of the statute we're rescinding. But it certainly... And I guess I'm interested in what is happening now. That, and I will probably talk with you about that at some other time, because I'm wondering now what you're doing, at least theoretically, in regard to this issue. I don't know if concrete steps have been taken, but I know that it's something that needs discussion.
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Morissette, I'd be happy to answer any more questions you have in this setting or any other.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay. I'd like to close the public hearing on House Bill 2243, and I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 2243.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2243 to the floor to do pass recommendation.
All right. Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2243 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator
Cruz?
Yes.
Senator George?
Yes.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Senator Morissette?
Aye.
Chair Monis-Anderson?
Aye. Motion carries. Would you like to carry this,
sure.
Senator Cruz? Okay. Senator Cruz will carry House Bill 2243, and I'd like to close the work session on House Bill 2243. Okay. And we're going to open a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 8, and we're going into, we'll stand at ease while we get someone on the phone. I'd like to reconvene the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 8, and we have Stephen Tai.
Yes.
And we would love to have your comments on this bill.
That's my co-sponsors and owner.
And please identify yourself for the record.
I see. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Tai, T-A-I. I'm with the Taipei Economic and Cultural Office in Seattle. The function of this office is equal to a consulate general. It is my great honor to say a few words concerning Taiwan's participation in the WHO. So can I say a few words?
Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah. First of all, I would like to draw your attention. Taiwan established the sister state relationship with Oregon in 1986. Since then, the relations have been a remarkable progress. For instance, in 2004, Taiwan is Oregon's seventh largest trading partner with export, totaling $650 million. So if Taiwanese people are infected by the virus, it will have an impact on Oregon's economy. Secondly, so over the years, the U.S. government supports Taiwan's participation in the WHO. For instance, the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives support the case as well. Last year, the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives passed the resolution, and it became a public law in the U.S. on June 14 last year. And thirdly, you may be aware, both China and Taiwan are members of the World Trade Organization, APEC, and other organizations. So we think, why not? Taiwan is only one to be an observer in the WHO. So we don't see any violations against China. The next point I want to draw your attention is the WHO is a health issue, and it is nothing to do with politics. Epidemics have no political allegiance. So I think indeed all are the citizens of the globe. So therefore, viruses such as SARS, avian influenza, and other infectious and non-communicable diseases will not escape us just because of the island is named Taiwan. So we need your support. And last but not least, Taiwan contributes quite a lot of to the international community in regard to this health issue. For instance, Taiwan has not only provided medical assistance and shared the success, successful experience with China, also donated to the international community over 120 million in medical and humanitarian relief to 78 countries, including five continents, from 1995 to 2002. So this is my point, and I thank you for your attention, and your support will be quite really appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tai.
You're most welcome.
So very much. We appreciate the comments that you have made. I think we all feel very strongly that we are going to a world economy, and the relationships that we have with Taiwan are so very important. Are there any comments from the rest of the committee? No, there are none. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, I'd like to close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 8, and I'd like to open a work session on House Joint Memorial 8.
Madam Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 8 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Can we do adopt those?
Okay, yeah, all right.
Okay, as Senator Cruz adopts.
Do adopt.
Okay, Senator moves that House Joint Memorial 8 be sent to the floor with a do adopt recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Senator George?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Senator Morissette?
Excused.
Chairman Sanderson?
Aye. Motion carries, and I'll carry the bill. And committee's adjourned.